It's 4:06 and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Barrett. And now, he's a New York Times best-selling fantasy writer, he's a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fanatic, and he's got one of the most impressive beards in Wisconsin. Patrick Rothfuss is with us. Patrick, thanks for joining us for this week's Geek Out segment.
Thanks for having me.
All right, well, what is on your mind this week, Patrick?
Well, one of the things, I was just at a convention, and I was on a panel that I really enjoyed. It was called, Does Storytelling Matter in Video Games? And this is an issue that's kind of near and dear to my heart, as I'm a lifetime video game, computer game player, and kind of a storyteller in every sense of the word.
And you're a novelist, so obviously you're thinking about the arc of it and the flow of a story. Is this something that video game designers are just starting to think about, or has this been a big question for a while?
Well, actually, I think it's something that used to happen a lot more often in video games kind of back in the day. Some of the very, very first games I ever played had really good narrative arcs, kind of for the same reason that a lot of early Hollywood movies had really, really good scripts. Because that's all you had. You had actors and scripts. And you did $1 million of special effects just wasn't an option. So you really worked on the story. Video games used to be the same way. In the early days, it was just text. Some of the very first games I played were called, specifically, they were called interactive fiction. And I played those starting in the fifth, sixth grade, and for years afterwards, it really was a formative experience for me.
Isn't there a challenge as a writer or a script writer? You get to pick where the story goes. When you've got a player involved, how much free will do you give them versus railroading them down a narrative arc?
You know, and that you just hit on like one of the absolute biggest issues. In some ways, it's easy with a novel. A novel is a very established technology, and nobody complains that they didn't get any choices in a novel. That's not necessarily true. Some people do complain
people do complain.
You don't like the ending. But with video games, it is a whole different medium, and that means you can give the participant genuine agency in a story and the ability to change the outcome. And that it's something that it's a paralyzing choice for some designers because it's not something that existed 30 years ago in any medium.
Well, what games have you seen out there that are really kind of going that extra mile and upping the ante with storytelling?
Storytelling doesn't necessarily link to the ability to steer the course of a story. Portal is a game that at its root is really just an interesting physics game. You're given a gun that can shoot two portals, and you can walk through one and you come out the other. And if one's on the ceiling and one's on the floor, you can fall through one and come out the ceiling. It's a very simple premise, and it could have turned into a fairly simple puzzle game. But the narrative arc in the story is so amazingly compelling, and that's what turned a relatively simple puzzle game into like a really amazing experience for like millions of people. That's one of the best examples I can think of.
I was with you playing the Infocom, those text adventure games as a kid, and I sometimes wonder, we have such amazing graphics nowadays. Do people put more of their focus on more realistic images, more realistic looking violence, wackier gameplay, and not coming up with those simple little things that tell better stories?
I think it is. It's absolutely the case. And you can demonstrate it very easily just by looking at Hollywood again. No one in Hollywood would say, if you say, so, can you spend $50 million on special effects? And everyone go, oh, sure, you need that for a big budget Hollywood movie. And then you say, so would you spend $50 million on the script for this? and they'd laugh their ass off because, you kind of get what you pay for, and if you're valuing one over the other, I mean, story is the bones of it all. You know, and it's nice to have a pretty face, but with no bones, you know, you can't go dancing with this thing, to really mix a metaphor there.
We've got a Facebook comment I want to read to you, Patrick. Tyler says, in the past, there were many games that already did surpass most novels in terms of storytelling and imagination, but that was back in the era of NES and SNES. Recent games, with a few exceptions, are too focused on flashy graphics and not as much on story and gameplay. But he goes on to say, I have faith, though. The indie game market is growing, which opens the door for people like me with healthy imaginations to make their own games.
And I think that's absolutely the case, in the same way that indie filmmaking is allowing people to really explore. You know, the technology has become such that you don't need $10,000 for film stock anymore. You can shoot it digitally and make a decent movie. You know, two people working some long hours can actually produce a decent game, and if you want to value story in that instance, you can do that. But it is a little harder to sell that to some of these big budget, you know, game producing studios.
Film critic Roger Ebert famously took on video games. He said they would never, ever compare or have the narrative scope of film. What do you say to what the late Roger Ebert had to say?
Well, I think that I wish I had the time to look up when exactly he made that quote. Because if he made it in, you know, 1983, it's probably a pretty fair assessment given what games existed in 1983. You can't really hold up Super Mario Brothers next to Casablanca and really think that they're doing the same thing at all. But, you know, he was speaking a little bit from ignorance. There's no doubt about that. You know, some of the most incredibly engaging and memorable pieces of storytelling I've experienced have happened in games.
Well, I want to ask you, you know, games in general, there is so much research today about kids' brains and video games, and there are researchers who say we need to take games seriously because they can be a big educational aid. You know, there's a video game center here at the UW-Madison campus. And other people say, you know, it gets kids desensitized to violence, turns them into couch potatoes. And you're a dad. Have you given this some thought about what your gut feeling is on video games?
You know, I could happily engage in a series of like 4-hour symposia on that. Because, I mean, the only truthful, realistic answer to that is that it is so complicated, and anyone who claims that they know the truth and that they really know what's going on is either a liar or like profoundly self-delusioned. You know, I love my little boy. I don't think it's healthy for him at this point to be plugged into a computer game all the time. He needs to experience and learn things about the real world. Am I going to keep him away from games forever? No. I learned so much from. I learned to type because of those early Infocom games. I learned a huge vocabulary, you know, from them. Words that I still use today, and I remember specifically when I ran into them in those games. So, I mean, yes, they're useful. Are they potentially dangerous? Absolutely. They're, you know, people are creating games that are as addictive as drugs. And are they fun to play? Yeah. But, you know, it is fun to do drugs, too, I hear. And, you know, it's a bad analogy, but yeah, I can't give you a straight answer there. It's so complex, and there are a lot of very good arguments and some very good science on both sides.
Patrick, we've heard some research that suggests that public radio people are not always video game people. If you had to suggest just a game or two in our last 30 seconds or so to maybe warm people up to the idea, where would you point them?
You know, it's a little tricky. The first thing that I'd say is sort of like if I was trying to recommend a book. I can't recommend a book that everyone out there is going to like. What I would say is all of you out there have some sort of friend that plays video games. I would ask that person, in the same way that you'll get a much better book recommendation from a friend, you'll get a better video game recommendation from a friend. They know you so much better. But I will say there are brilliant games out there, both storytelling and non. Even the ones that don't have a strong narrative arc can be brilliant problem solvers. I mean, that's one of the main things that these games can teach children and that I learned growing up. You learn problem solving like nobody's business playing some of these games.
Well, Patrick, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Patrick Rothfuss, the best-selling author of The Name of the Wind, the first book in his trilogy.
Coming up, our guest takes stock of Iran's nuclear ambitions and whether the U.S. has a responsibility to stop them from getting the bomb. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.